I'll remind you, this picture on the screen is a reminder of the fact that we're going to start the bread ministry next Sunday. We're going to offer bread to the community. Anybody who wants to stop by and pick some up next Sunday afternoon is welcome to do that. If you'd like to participate in that, then we'd love to have whatever bread that you would like to share. It doesn't have to be fancy, doesn't have to be homemade. Bread at Walmart is 88 cents a loaf, unless you get some of those bent loaves made in the deli that are a dollar. As you're in Walmart this week, pick up an extra loaf of bread. I've read of several congregations or several churches where people are actually making choices about things to buy. Instead of getting a candy or a treat or a box of cookies or something like that, they're choosing to buy the bread to bring instead of that particular item. Certainly be a wonderful teaching experience for children to make that choice about sharing. So if you're willing to participate, and I don't want you to feel like you have to participate, that's not what this is about at all. I think we'll have plenty, but if you would like to participate, I think it would be useful and beneficial for all of us to have that opportunity. Last Sunday afternoon, when I left the building, I went to Sprouts to pick up a few things at that grocery store. It's about 2:30 in the afternoon. I get out of the car, pull in, get out of the car, and I notice this other guy pulls in about three spaces away, and when he gets out of his vehicle, he just turns and starts coming right toward me. And his eyes are just locked on me, and he's just coming straight. And I'm like, my first thought is, do I know this person? And I'm thinking, no, I probably don't. What's taking place here? He walks right up to me, and he gets about 6-8 feet away, and he says, "Did Kobe Bryant die?" And I said, "Yeah, that's what they're reporting right now." And he said, "Well, I watched the news last night, and it wasn't on the news." I said, "Well, it happened today, and they're starting to share it now." And then he just kind of put his head down, and he started to walk toward the building, and Kobe Bryant died. And as I went into the store, there were just so many things that were going through my mind. First of all, imagine how much of a shock it is that you go to a total stranger seeking confirmation. He may have been other people in the store. He said, "Did you hear about Kobe?" And then he was like, "No, that didn't really happen. I mean, I watched the news. Wasn't on the news." And then he's trying to persuade himself, yeah, that did really happen. It was a shock to a lot of people because I think here's a young man, literally at 41 years of age, a young man who's been just this incredible physical specimen, this man who's handled so many different things. And people looked at him and they just felt like he could probably handle just about anything. And then to see him struck down, especially with a child in the equation as well. And so our world was kind of hurting just a little bit this week. I know that we look at that passage in James chapter 4. It talks about life is a mist. It's gone before you know it. And events like this help us to be reinforced of the reality of that and how literally true that certainly is. I read several articles about Bryant during the week, and I won't go into all the detail, but one of them was written by a guy named Rick Buckner. Buckner covered the Lakers in the early part of Kobe's career, now as a sports writer on the East Coast. He has a daughter, a 13-year-old daughter, who's a very good basketball player. And on Friday afternoon, he had sent a clip of some of her play to Bryant, and he had answered back, "Looks like you need to move west and join Mamba. I work 2 hours with the girls every day, will for the next 5 years." And having no idea how life was going to change so dramatically. The reason I mention him is today I'd like to talk about a man and his 12-year-old daughter. It's a familiar Bible story, but I think there are some things, some emotions that can be useful and beneficial as we look at both of these stories just a little bit together. We'll start in Mark chapter 5, start in verse 21. It says, "When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and lived." So Jesus went with him. This guy is a synagogue leader. Will he be a synagogue leader tomorrow? No. No. He has abandoned his beliefs. He has given over to the other side. And the people of that synagogue, and we see several times in Scripture in the New Testament, where people, Jewish people who were tempted to believe in Jesus or interested in studying Jesus or knowing more about Jesus, were afraid to do that because they would be put out of the synagogue. This guy is going to lose his political and social standing because he has come to Jesus. Why? Well, he's desperate. He's desperate. He has a child that is so close to passing away that there's nothing that he sees that could change that situation. And so somewhere in his mind or somewhere in the conversation or maybe somebody mentions it, who knows? And they say, well, what about that guy? That guy that's going around teaching? What about that guy that claims to be the Messiah? Well, he's been doing remarkable things. And Jairus says, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it. I'm going to see what happens. And he lays everything down in order to have that opportunity. When we first started in youth ministry in 1974, Terry and I had this incredible gift that we didn't understand until later how incredible it really was. And that is our youth ministry program had a youth center. And the corner of the lot where the building was, the church had bought this elegant two-story, four-bedroom home. And they had bought it for another purpose. That purpose didn't work out, and so it became the youth center. And having a facility like that was just an amazing thing and a blessing that, like I say, we just couldn't imagine really how much of a blessing it would be. The sidelight to that, though, was, because it was a home, there were still two bedrooms upstairs. There were many of the rooms downstairs and one of the large bedrooms upstairs were used for games and classes and all that kind of stuff. But there were two bedrooms upstairs that were still set up as bedrooms. And so there were people who wanted to come and stay there. This house is 2 miles south of the Texas Med Center, the south side of Rice University. And people, particularly from MD Anderson, would call and say, can we stay at the house? And because we lived next door, we were the people who became the keepers of the house. People wouldn't always be there before 5. Sometimes they were there at 2 in the morning. Sometimes they were leaving late at night. All kinds of situations. And so we really, over that 5 years, got an opportunity to build some relationships and get to know some people who, by all definitions, could be defined as desperate. Many of them were there with their children. There were people who could afford hotels. A lot of the people who were there came because they would get off work. They'd drive to Houston sometimes late into the night. Dad wanted to come. Mom wanted to come. And if those two were going to come, then usually you'd have to bring everybody. And so not only would you have the affected child, but you'd have brothers and sisters there. At that point, chemotherapy for children was quite difficult, and sometimes the child would need to stay an extra day. These were families that were desperately seeking an answer. Now, what would they have given to have their answer come true? Everything. Whatever they had, they would have given. There was no price that was too high. They were willing to make whatever sacrifice. I don't know what happened on that helicopter last Sunday. There are people who theorize that there was some time where they would have realized what was going on. What would Bryant have traded to land that helicopter safely? A championship ring? All 5 of them? his Oscar, his MVP award, his fame, all his millions of dollars. My guess is all of it, everything. And we find ourselves sometimes in our lives where the situation we're facing is nothing can be described as anything except desperate. I don't have an answer for this. And I look to the great physician, I look to my God, and I say, Lord, there's no way out of this. There's no way to fix this. I don't have the resources to fix this. I don't even know people who have the resources to fix this. I need your help in this situation. Jairus is the guy that you should see first. I call him Jairus, and I know people make fun of that. It's Jairus, probably. I looked it up. I listened to six renderings of how to pronounce his name and got six different versions. But the thing that was interesting to me was that's out of my past. And some of you who are older like I am may remember that same thing, because if you look at artwork from 17th century into the 1960s, this guy is Jairus. It's R-I-U-S. And as we grew up, that was the way it was said in pulpits and read from Scripture. And so that rendering of it, that alternate earlier rendering, is the thing I remember. So if I say the wrong word, then you'll know that's something that's still leaking out from my past there. A large crowd followed and pressed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. There are certainly people in our world who can identify with and understand that. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? The disciples, you see the people crowding against you, the disciples answered, and yet you can ask, who touched me? Isn't it interesting that the disciples always see things from a physical standpoint? Did Jesus really need to have them answer that question? No. They see it only from a practical standpoint. There's people everywhere. How in the world could we tell you who it was? There's people all over the place. And Jesus is constantly trying to get them to grow up and see things from a spiritual perspective instead of from an earthly perspective. And their resistance to that sometimes is literally overwhelming. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. What happened? Well, this desperate man has come to Jesus and says, please come to my house and heal my daughter. And while they're going to his house in Capernaum, another desperate person comes into their path. This woman is, she's convinced herself that if I can just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. The thing that jumps out to me in that interaction is that there are desperate people everywhere. They're here, they're there. There's so much desperation in this world. Right now, you may be experiencing some kind of intense feeling of desperation. If not, most of us have at some point in time in our lives. We felt that overwhelming kind of situation. And so we understand what desperate people need. Well, what can you do for a desperate person? One of the things, according to research, people who are desperate are looking for two things typically. They're looking for an answer. But as they look at other people, they want two things. They want somebody to acknowledge their situation, and they want somebody to care. Now, I believe that you can do those things without approving of behavior. I can hurt for what you're feeling. I can extend my heart to you for what you're wrestling with, even if it's something that I don't know fully about. I can ask and help people to understand that. Luke chapter 6, verse 31. This is from the CEB version. The golden rule. Treat people the same way that you want them to treat you. What if I were the desperate person in this situation? How would I want people to respond to that? Say, well, it's a lot of trouble. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of complication. We can go through a long list of rationalizations for why we ought to be doing or might be accomplishing or taking on another challenge. And yet, that's the way that we literally are supposed to respond. This morning, if you're not a desperate person, if you're not a desperate parent, thank God for that. Thank God that that's not what's going on in your life. But as you look around and you see people who do qualify as being desperate, there are ways that we can help, things that we can share with them. There's a third desperate person in this story, though. Let's read the end of the story. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" It's taken so long to find Jesus. It's taken so long to get back toward the house. Then they have this interruption of this other desperate person. And in all of that time, child has passed away. And the messenger says, "Don't bother. It's not necessary anymore." Overhearing what was said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." And that's what we've been talking about for the last few weeks. Over and over again, we hear this message of don't be afraid. Well, why wouldn't the parent of a child who had just died be afraid? Jesus says, wait for the final act. Wait for the conclusion. Verse 37. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." At that time, they had professional mourners. And this child has been dead long enough that someone in the family has called the professional mourners, hired the professional mourners to come in and to weep and to wail. Jesus says, and these people would have been the professionals at knowing when someone had passed away. Jesus says, no, that's not the case. And what did they do? They laughed at him. That's never a good idea to laugh at God. It's not what you want to do. Whether you're desperate or not, that's not a good beginning place. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were there with him. And went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her in Aramaic, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Now, the third character is mom. Think about mom for just a minute. All she knows is that dad has left everything. He has risked their livelihood. He's put them in a very precarious situation. He's gone away to find this Jesus of Nazareth. There's no way to communicate with him. She doesn't know if they've found him. She doesn't know if they are coming back. She doesn't know anything. The only thing she does know is that while dad has been gone, the daughter has died. And so she doesn't have anything, literally, but desperation at that point in time. And the amazing thing about that is her deliverance is on the way. Have you ever had that feeling that God walked ahead of you? When something happens in your life and you think, I wouldn't be able to handle this if God hadn't already done some things to put me in a place where I was able to go forward. She doesn't know that they're in the next block. She doesn't know that right around the corner is a hand that's going to walk in and say, "Get up, little girl." And the daughter's going to be up having food and going back to life. An amazing series of events. We don't know where the deliverance is. And when you're feeling so incredibly, incredibly desperate, maybe right outside the door, may just be one street over. It may be that it's not going to be fixed until the other side. But Jesus has made sure that's taken care of as well. This was a great opportunity for Jesus to demonstrate his power. And sometimes we say that and we kind of put a spin on it, or people feel like we're putting a spin on it saying, well, you know, all challenges are opportunities, and we understand that power of positive thinking business and all that. But there, isn't there a little more to it than that? Remember those Israelites coming out of Egypt? And they wound up on the banks of the Red Sea. Here's an ocean in front of them. And here's Pharaoh's thunderous army behind them. And they start to wail. "Why'd you bring us out? Why'd you lead us away from there? It wasn't that bad. We could have handled it." And Moses, after consulting with God, says, "Fear not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." And that's what all of us need at that moment when we're desperate. God has the power to do this. God has the power to fix this. God may choose to fix it in just a moment. He may choose to help me to grow to the place where I can manage it. He may resolve it on the other side of this life. There are all kinds of ways that that might happen. And surely there are times when we would prefer one thing or another. But God handles it in his own wisdom and in his own time. Why? Why does he respond to this man? Why does he respond to the woman? Why does he respond to the mother? Because he loves them, because he cares about them, and he wants them to know that he loves them and cares about them. And that's exactly the same thing that's happening to us. When you feel desperate, when I feel desperate, the reality of the fact that God loves me and God cares for me is critical. He brings deliverance. This morning, whatever your circumstance, whatever your situation, wherever you are today, don't give up on what God is able and willing and capable of doing.